funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What gives art the power to provoke minds and change hearts? And how can we use it to deal with our most vexing conflicts as a society? At 7 o'clock, a discussion at SMU's Trigg Hughes Student Center will feature speakers who are in a unique position to consider those questions. It's called Arts, Social Change, and Human Rights. And among its panelists are my two guests this afternoon. Sister Helen Prejean is with us for a second time on Think. Her best-selling memoir of ministering both to inmates condemned to death row and the families of their victims is called Dead Man Walking. In addition to the Academy Award-winning movie starring Susan Sarandon, the story was also adapted into a wildly successful modern opera by the same name. And its composer, Jake Heggie, is also with us today. Jake, Sister Helen, welcome to Think.
Thanks,
Chris. Good to be here.
Yes.
Jake, I really love the story, if I get this right, of the experience that you had with Terrence McNally, the librettist, in coming up with this, because he came in, I guess, with a list of ideas and mentioned this one, and you said, stop right there.
Well, Terrence McNally, of course, is the brilliant Tony Award-winning playwright, and he had never written an opera libretto before. And finding the right story for an opera is half the battle. If you have a great story, you're more likely to have a successful opera, something that connects. And we spent about a year searching back and forth, and then one day he said, I think I have a really good idea. He said, but I'm going to make a list of the ideas that I've had, and I'm going to read them to you, but I'm not going to tell you which one I want to do because it's very important that we both want to do the same story. So we sat down at lunch June 1997 in a cafe in San Francisco, and he looked at me and he said, well, the first one's Dead Man Walking. And I just literally every hair stood up on end, and I started hearing music. I started hearing ensembles and solos. The emotional themes immediately translated themselves into musical ideas and themes. And I said, you can stop right there. And he said, well, I did write this whole list, so can I please read the rest of the list? And so he did, but to this day, I really don't remember the rest of the list because I was already figuring out how Dead Man Walking would go, and that's the piece that he really wanted to do too.
Did you approach the project with a clear-cut sense of what you wanted the audience to believe about capital punishment when they walked out?
Oh, no. Our whole goal was not to do a documentary, a remake of the film, a biography, any of that. It was to tell the story, bring people into the story that Sister Helen drew so clearly in her book and has lived, you know, time and time again. I don't like artworks that preach or tell you how you're supposed to feel, and I have no expectation. I just hope that people will come with an open heart and mind and allow themselves to feel and to be drawn in to the human experience that these people are having. And that's what drew me to the story immediately. It was innately operatic, huge emotions, a firestorm of controversy, and larger forces beyond people's control, you know? And the fact that the death penalty is there throughout raises the stakes to life and death at every turn. So these people are under enormous pressure. And I think the way that Helen told the story in her book, the way that Terrence told it in a libretto, it makes it very easy for people to imagine themselves in any of those positions. And what I like about how the opera was structured and how it works is that it gives you a chance to feel what those people, or dip a toe in the water of that well, you know, of how those people are feeling on all sides of this issue, this problem.
Sister Helen, as so many people know, opera can be one of the most profoundly emotional experiences an audience has in coming to a story. But I wonder if you had reservations at the very beginning in thinking about the limited number of words in the libretto and whether or not there would be some subtlety in the story traded for having this very powerful emotional tool.
You know, the first thing that came into my head when I heard it was going to be an opera, what I thought was, wow, you're going to have the full force of drama and music coming together to tell the story. I didn't think of anything limiting. I thought that we're going to be able to bring out resonances because music, of course, brings us into places of our hearts we don't even know we have. And the fullness of drama and music was all I could think. All right, bring it on. This will be great.
I know that in your work, and you travel still something like 15 days a month, is that right? About half of every month you're...
More than that recently, anyway, mm-hmm. but a lot.
So you're on the road all the time, and you're reliving for every audience the story and the emotions of it. But I wonder if there are certain places when you happen to see a performance that continue to be so powerful for you that they're almost hard to watch.
Yeah, those are pretty easy to come to. When the mother of Joseph de Roche and the two brothers are saying goodbye to him because he's going to be killed. It's not like somebody dying in a hospital where you can see them fading. He's fully alive. And so his mother's telling him goodbye, and the brothers are trying to be strong. I have accompanied families in that journey. They're with the victim's family who have lost their loved ones and are being given this solution by society that they're going to help them with their grief or help heal them or give them closure or whatever. And those that buy into it and those that don't buy into it, that the death penalty, which they're going to get to witness, is going to heal them. Just struggling out of, they wake up in the morning and it's an ordinary day and their children are alive. And by the time they go to bed, everything's different because they've been visited by the deputy sheriff and they have to go down to the morgue and their child is dead. Realms of grief and sorrow and loss that I had never ventured into in my life. And then the third thing is to be with a person and walk with them in their last hours of life as they are being killed. There's a protocol to this death. It is very worked out. The only way you know that he is going to die is with your mind and you watch. They have a big clock in the execution chamber. I've been to the one here in Texas. And the witnessing chambers where the state's witnesses are, where the victim's family are, and also where the family stands of the ones being killed, where mothers have actually stood and put their hands against that glass and looked down as their child is being killed. I hardly know what words to use because it's so surreal as you watch the hours ticking by. And I have gotten to know guards and people who have to do the killing for us and all, and their emotions as well, because they're just trying to do a job and that kind of thing. So those, I would point to those three moments as they always get to me.
I wonder, Jake, if there's an advantage to putting a story like this into art in that an audience comes to an opera expecting mm-hmm. to interact on a very deep level mm-hmm. with whatever the material is, whether mm-hmm. it's something very profound or even something lighter. They're mm-hmm. expecting to sort of open their emotions.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. People have asked me many. Well, when we first decided to do Dead Man Walking, people said, "How are you going to make an opera out of that? Why are you doing that?" Well, it touches on human experience that I think you'll find in many classic operas, many classic plays, and it's, you know, I think because it's so emotional. I mean, I think people like the opera because it is big emotionally. It's big music. It's big lyricism. It's big visuals, and it is larger than life. But it captures feelings that we all have as human beings in a much larger scale, and it allows us to meditate on them. Helen talks a lot about we don't have a lot of places we go to stop and really meditate on an experience or a feeling, and the theater is one place people go and give themselves over to a different sense of time passing and to involve themselves in a story and this music. And I think it's very powerful that way. I think people will find they have an opera experience by going to the opera house, hearing the music and the singing, great singing, big voices, big forces. But they'll also be, I think, might be surprised at how involved they get in this particular story, because it is a timeless story, but it's timely, and it's a very American story, and yet it's universal, because the themes are death, life, forgiveness, love, redemption, and it's big themes that you'll find in a lot of operas. But I think it just it's a very present in our world today, and I think it's surprised audiences. Also, the fact that it's not only in English, but American English, and it also brings in many different kinds of music. I have a creative crockpot that has been filled with all different kinds of music as an American growing up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And the way Terrence wrote the libretto allowed me to explore that. So there's gospel and jazz and rock and roll, and as well as classical themes. And you'll feel a little Gershwin, a little Bernstein, and all filtered through this Heggy brain, you know.
God help us.
But there's laughter in it, too. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really moments of real laugh out loud, which is so essential in a journey like that. So I think it's been surprising to audiences. It's been playing all over the world. It's had actually even more performances in abolitionist countries than it has in the United States. When it first opened, it had a lot of productions here. And then that slowed down, and then it's starting to pick up again with new companies. But it went to Canada and Australia and all over Europe, and it's going to be in South Africa at the end of the year in Cape Town. So it's had an amazing journey, and it has a real hold on audiences.
Dead Man Walking composer Jake Heggie is with us, along with memoirist Sister Helen Prejean. We're talking about the performance that will be staged by the Fort Worth Opera May 2nd through May 10th of Dead Man Walking, the opera. There is also a discussion tonight on the SMU campus starting at 7 o'clock entitled Arts, Social Change, and Human Rights. Both Sister Helen and Jake will be participating in that. Right now, we want to take a quick break from this amazing conversation. And sometimes, Jeff Whittington is sitting down here, sometimes, Jeff, it's harder than other times to break from our discussion, and this is one of those days where I am tearing myself away, but it is very important because the only reason that we're able to bring you people like Sister Helen Prejean and Jake Heggie are your support, are the support of people who listen to this radio station, believe that public radio has a value in the community, and understand that something you value deserves your support. You can't sit around and wait for someone else to do it. You have to make the call yourself. Our telephone number, if you'd like to become a member and support the station, is 1-800-456-5372. You can also go online to kera.org.
Yeah, Chris, I think we're definitely believe that we're verging in the on the territory of too interesting of a topic for the pledge drive today. However,
we're willing to risk it.
We are.
Yeah, and I support that. This is me talking.
Well, thank you very much, Sister Helen. We really it's very important that for there to be intelligent, calm conversations about these very difficult topics about the arts, about social issues, about the death penalty, for there to be a venue for those kinds of conversations where everybody's opinion is welcome, where people can discuss it calmly and in a very relational way. I think it's very important that that venue exists. And that venue here today, at least for the next half an hour or so, is KERA. You tune in here every day. You hear these kinds of conversations. Sometimes we have fun. Sometimes we talk about serious issues. It's all worth your support at 800-456-5372. 2,311 of you have made a contribution so far during this membership campaign. Thanks so much to each of you. But we would really like to be able to thank you. And the only way that's going to happen is if you call 800-456-5372 or pledge online at kera.org.
Thanks right now go out to people like Daphne Self in Richardson, Eric Woodruff in Plano, and everyone else who is on the line right now waiting to become a member. Perhaps you've just decided to pick up the phone. If you need that number again, it's 1-800-456-5372, or you can do this at kera.org. There are plenty of places on the radio where you can hear a topic like this discussed in sort of vitriolic shouting tones. You come to KERA because you know that there's more to the subject than people screaming at each other, more to any subject. And we're proud of you, our audience, that you get that and that you want this content. But we have to ask you very honestly that if you think it's important enough to listen to, why you wouldn't also think it's important enough to make a contribution to. Any amount that you can give and works within your budget is wonderful as far as we're concerned. 1-800-456-5372 is the number, or you can go online to kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
That is a small clip from Dead Man Walking the Opera. We have composer Jake Hagee with us today and Sister Helen Prejean, whose story the opera is based on. The Fort Worth Opera will be performing Dead Man Walking from May 2nd through May 10th. This evening at the Hughes Trigg Student Center on the SMU campus, there will be a discussion starting at 7 entitled Arts, Social Change, and Human Rights. If you'd like to join our conversation today, we welcome you to call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. If I have my numbers right, there are 354 human beings on death row in Texas today. I wonder, and that's the highest of any state in the country, I wonder if that makes a performance in Texas for each one of you different somehow than it would be in a place where the death penalty is seldom or never applied.
Well, you know, I go to speak all over the United States, other countries too, but when I come to Texas, it's always special. Because there are a lot of things said about Texas in different circles, because Texas has killed more human beings. It's the killing chamber's right down the street from Sam Houston. And I've spoken at Sam Houston to the kids there. And I said, right down the street from you is one of the busiest killing chambers in the United States. And it could be in India. And it's special to be in Texas. I'm glad the opera's in Texas. I found that Texas people, when you talk to them, are really no different from other people in the United States. Most people in the United States do not reflect deeply on the death penalty because they're terrible crimes. We're outraged over it. We say whoever did that deserves to die. But it's not one of the moral issues that affects most people personally, so you don't reflect deeply on it. So to be here in Texas, it's like I'm happy that the opera is here because Texas people, when they do reflect on the death penalty, respond like people in Vermont or Massachusetts or wherever. Once they go deeply into it, they often have the response of, well, wow, what most people say is, oh, I didn't realize it was like that. Like guards are involved in doing the killing force and just the different ramifications. Oh, I didn't realize a person had a mother with brothers who can have to tell him goodbye. Or just that anger and outrage. The genius of this opera is everybody is going to witness the crime. And everything uncoils from the prologue where we're going to witness it. So we're not going to use any moral issue on did he do it or did he not. We know he did it. So bring it on. This is what the death penalty is for. And it brings people on that journey.
I love being in Texas. I love the people in Texas. I do a lot of work here. You know, I have my opera. Moby Dick is going to be here next year, commissioned for the new Winspear Opera House by the Dallas Opera. So to be here doing Dead Man Walking, Darren Woods, who's the head of the company, has wanted to bring it here since the premiere almost 9 years ago. And there's been enormous championing of the piece to bring it here so that the thing is, it's not telling you how to think. It's just opening up another way of opening up a dialogue. And when you add music to the mix, people become very multidimensional. What music can do in an opera is expand and explore the complexity of what everyone is feeling, where they are in their life now, where they've been. And with just a few notes and a few words, you can tell a lot about a person. And yet each person is a universe unto themselves. And I think what the opera does is allows us to explore that everyone in this situation has feelings. And it gives you a chance to really reflect on it.
Chris, if I could just say this, you know, I got into this not knowing what I'm getting into. I mean, I'm a regular Catholic nun that taught in middle school, taught religion and English. And here I find myself on death row with people who had done unspeakable crimes. And then I find myself, you know, with the victim's family and all. And so the aria for my character is my journey. And just the way that is written, that works like a motif that keeps floating through. It goes, my journey to the truth, my journey. And that is inside my soul now. I sing that in the shower or it comes through. And the journey part is just so real. You get into something, you don't realize what you're getting into, and then you begin to, it's like your boat hits a current and you start moving with it. And that's what's going to happen to the audience as well. You know, from that opening curtain, we're all going to be moving in a current and being on a journey.
Well, and what's interesting about you saying that, and excuse me for 1 second, is that you chose to get in that boat and then move toward it. Many people might have gotten in the boat and paddled as furiously as they could away from this.
Well, but I didn't realize where the boat was going. I mean, that's what the journey part is. I mean, I wrote to a man on death row in Louisiana in 1982. I never dreamed they were going to kill him. I didn't know anything about these issues. And they killed him 2.5 years later. And at 5:45, everybody had to leave the execution chamber except the spiritual advisor, who is me. And I'm with a man as they electrocute him to death in Louisiana. And I witnessed it. And you, something happens inside. And when I came out, it was the middle of the night. I threw up. I'd never watched a person be killed in front of my eyes. It was all legal. The polls said that people wanted it. But my eyes had seen it. And that's really when my mission began. I went, I got to start telling this story because people, they are never going to be close to this. They're going to hear about it. It's going to be when the politicians seeking office, that kind of thing. But I know if people can come close to this and they're going to see, and if there's any kind of alternative to this, I know that they're going to choose life. And so anyway, it's a very mixed bag. People have deep ambivalences. But you know, William Faulkner, when he got the Nobel Prize for Literature, in his speech afterwards said, the only thing worth writing about, not to mention singing about, is the human heart in conflict with itself. So we're going to open up people's hearts to this ambivalence that most people feel about this issue.
You know, I was guilty of that before I started to write it. I had not really reflected. I was, you know, like you said, a lot of people, you know, you feel outraged and recognize the horror of the crime, and you start to think, well, yeah, that person probably deserves to die, and that's about what you do. And but when you really go there into the journey and you think, okay, by doing that, does that raise us up as a society or does it bring us down? You know, what does it do to us in general being complicit in these executions where we kill people legally? And then where do you draw the line? Is it okay to kill or is it not okay to kill? You know, and what kind of model do you set for children and for other people when you say, well, it's okay to kill this way, but it's not okay to kill that way? You know, those are all big questions that a lot of us don't really think about because we try to avoid that. It's tough. It's really tough. So to be drawn into the musical world that not only gives you, you know, the fullness, like she said, of a theatrical experience, but brings those questions to you. And I would say it confronts you with them, but it also draws you in. You know, and I think it's very important. It was a really brilliant idea on Terrence McNally's part to make that story into an opera. And it's had a surprising impact on a lot of people. Although I do have to correct one thing. Sister Helen did have some concerns when she called me. She said, now, Jake, do you write that atonal stuff, or are people going to be able to hum a tune?
Yeah. I said, we got to be able to hum a tune when we leave out of there.
You had to be able to sing it in the shower.
That's right.
But, you know, I want to say one other thing about being drawn deep into this journey. It's been with the victims' families.
Yeah.
Because most people, when they personalize this, say, if somebody killed my daughter, my child, or my wife, I know I'd want to see them dead. And there's... what's underneath a rationale for the death penalty is we're going to do this for the victims' families. But when you start, I've met so many of these families now. Think of it for a minute. Okay, now the way we're going to honor your dead child, we hope you won't have to wait too long. Hope it won't be 10 years. Hope it won't be 15 years. But you're going to have to wait. And then we'll summon you when it's time and you get to come to the witnessing chamber, send a representative, and you get to watch now as we give you your justice. What happens to families who are waiting 10 years, 15 years for this so-called justice and their wound is public? The media has access to every time there's a change in the status of the case. And then there's the media there with the victims' families. And what happens to them? In terms of a healing process of waiting for this. And the opera is complex. Well, the experience is complex. There are some victims' families who say, absolutely, and you will hear them with a microphone right to their face right after they found out their daughter is killed and somebody asks, what do you want to see happen to the person who killed your child or whatever? And they go, I'd like to inject them myself. But what else goes on in that journey in people? And is it possible to come out from under that heavy rock and ever have anything like a normal life again, ever to experience joy again? And the victims' families in the opera are complex. Mm-hmm. And so you see people trying to make their way here.
Tonight at the talk, they're going to do a couple of excerpts from the opera, and they're also going to do a couple of excerpts from a song cycle that Helen and I wrote together called The Deepest Desire, which is about being pulled in that boat and not knowing where to go and suddenly feeling that the answer to the deepest desire in your heart is calling you the whole time and not being afraid to suddenly ride that tidal wave right to it. It's been an amazing experience in my life, being in touch with this incredible woman who has opened up a way of thinking and a way of looking at the world that I had cheated myself out of for so long. And one of the reasons I think she's one of the most incredible people I know is she feels this fire about injustice and this anger that motivates her so much, but it's with compassion, and it's with embracing everyone who's involved in the picture, not just one point of view, but trying to take in everybody's feelings into the situation. And I think that's very rare these days. We usually stay one side or the other. What she's done is gone into the furnace, you know, and come out the other side stronger and clearer about knowing what's really going on and what the truth of the situation is.
Composer Jake Heggie of Dead Man Walking and activist and memoirist Sister Helen Prejean are my guests. We will take a quick break now. We promise we will get to your calls after this break concludes. I know many of you would like to interact with our guests. Right now, though, we would ask that you give us a call at our other very important line. If this is the kind of programming that you value, if you recognize that public radio is something you would not want to do without, please give us a call at 1-800-456-5372. There is not another radio station in this market that gets an entire hour for a discussion like this to consider multiple points of view, to interact in a civil way, and to consider things without requiring that you agree one way or another. We're really proud of being able to bring you the programming, and we are honestly entirely indebted to you because it's your dollars that make it possible. Again, the number to support the program is 1-800-456-5372. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Chris. Great conversation, and I don't want to break away from it, but you know what? This is how we come to you a couple of times a year. This is how we raise 56% of the budget for this radio station. It comes directly from you, folks. You listen to the station. It's listener-supported public radio. So we're asking you to take responsibility for the fact that you use the service. You get something out of the Think program, maybe. Maybe you listen to Fresh Air or the Diane Rehm Show, or maybe you're a Morning Edition, All Things Considered fan, but you listen all day. This is the soundtrack to your day. We're asking you to support it at 800-456-5372 or online at kera.org. And if you're in the Tyler area and listening, and we know that there are many of you, Blake Bailey, one of our terrific KERA members in Tyler, has offered a $1,000 challenge for residents of Tyler who listen to KERA at 100.1 on the dial. Blake is offering a dollar-for-dollar match of all contributions up to $1,000 from folks in the Tyler area. We did this last year with Blake, and it was very successful thanks to the generosity of you folks in Tyler. So come on, Tyler, let's hear from you. Let's hear from everybody, but let's hear from Tyler as well at 800-456-5372.
Every contribution makes a difference. You know, the reason that we say any amount is good is because it's really true. This is a place where we, pinch a penny till it's screams and squeals, and we try to be really, really careful with the money that you send us. We know that you work hard for it. We work hard with the money that you give us and try to bring you the programming that we know that you will appreciate. It is listener support, though, that makes the station run. 1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number. If you believe in public radio, the best way to show that this is something you support is by making a financial contribution, because not only does it make a sort of statement, it also is a very practical way to keep the programs that you love on the air.
You know, the topic like this today, there are no sponsors or advertisers that are going to call station management and go, I can't believe you you know, you did a show on the death penalty. I can't, but I'm pulling my sponsorship. And no one's afraid of that. No one's worried about it. We wouldn't be anyway, but no one is, because we're beholden to you. You are the people who provide the lion's share of the funding for this public radio service. And a diversity of opinions is crucial to, I think, a well-balanced and well-functioning society. You may agree with our guests 50% of the time and disagree with them 50% of the time, and you know what? That's a batting average. That's a batting average that I'm comfortable with. And if that's the case, then, you know, I would ask you to consider what that's worth, to have a place in the media that you can reliably depend on every single day to provide that breadth and that wide range of opinions, and to stimulate maybe emotions or thoughts or positions of your own. I think it's worth a little bit of support. I support the station as well as a member. So I would ask you, I would invite you to join the station if you're already a member, to give an additional gift, to do something to help support this institution. It's been here for 35 years. And the next step is yours, 800-456-5372.
The terrific thing is, whether you call that number, 800-456-5372, or go online to kera.org, if you are busy, and we know just about all of you are busy all the time, this interaction only takes about 2 minutes. You can pick a level, decide how you want to pay, and get that all taken care of very, very quickly. And that 2 minutes that you take right now will keep the station strong for a solid year. That is something to be proud of on your part. We really appreciate your support. We know that you have choices about where you put your money, and including not-for-profit choices where you put your money. We think if you are using the service all the time, it makes perfect sense for you to support it as well with your dollars. Again, our number is 1-800-456-5372, and the place online to go is kera.org. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
Another scene from the opera Dead Man Walking. My guests this afternoon are composer Jake Heggie and Sister Helen Prejean, upon whose memoir the opera is based. You can join us right now at 1-800-933-5372. Let's hear from Rachel in Dallas. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm actually at a loss for words. Just a quick comment for Sister Helen Prejean. This is Rachel Marcellus, and you helped my father.
Oh, Rachel.
How are you?
Oh, listen, I'm really, really fine. I'm very touched even to hear your voice.
It's so good to hear your voice, too. Oh. I just want to thank you. I read your book when you first handed it to my dad many, many years ago, and I'm 24 now, and I've read it recently, and it had a completely different meaning for me.
Oh, Rachel, and just tell folks who your dad was.
Howard Marcellus, Jr.
I mean,
He was a wonderful man.
Yes, he was a wonderful man. He was on the pardon board of Louisiana and came to question the death penalty. And he went along with the pressure of what they told him to do. The governor appointed you, now be loyal. Then he has to witness an execution, cried all the way home. And then I called him up when I wrote Dead Man Walking, and he told me the whole story of what happened to him as he participated in the pardon board. And he's died recently. Give my love to your mother, Rachel, and a lot to you. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks so much, Rachel. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Suzanne in Rowlett. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead, please.
I was just calling to ask your guests if Faith Hathaway had a character in the opera. Faith Hathaway was the girl that was murdered that graduation night in 1980. I sat next to her graduation night from high school. It was Mandeville High School.
Wow.
And I wanted to know if she had a character in the opera.
She does appear at the beginning because our story is a composite of several stories. So it's not based on that original story in Helen's book. Much like what Tim Robbins did with the movie, he combined elements of the two stories that Sister Helen tells in Dead Man Walking. But we do have the teenagers at the very beginning, and as Helen said, we witness the crime, we see how brutal it is, and we start from a place of outrage. And then the two teenagers are silent witnesses at a couple of other places in it, but they're represented by their parents, and we get a sense of who they were and the love that they inspired through their parents.
Yes, Suzanne, let me just say to you that, of course, it's a couple, and so it's different from Faith, who was alone with the two men who killed her. So in a way, her death was just entirely horrible. I do want to tell you that just recently, within the last 6 months, you know, her mother, Elizabeth, I got to visit with her. And Elizabeth's health has really gone down. Well, in fact, she died like 1 month after we met. And I was able to, in some way, to thank Elizabeth for all that she has been, and she's an incredible woman, her mother. She and her husband have done a lot to help victims' families through when they were going to the trial, and they just are so besieged on so many sides. You sat next to Faith Hathaway at her graduation, and then I can't even imagine what it has been for you then to hear of her terrible murder where she was left alone there in the woods after being raped and killed. It's hard to comprehend the terribleness of this for people, but thank you for calling in and reminding us of who Faith Hathaway was, because nobody supports or condones. Every one of us feels outrage over the death of innocent people like Faith Hathaway, and we need to really try to get as much as we can to the roots of crime in this society so that we can prevent that kind of violence. Thank you.
Let's go next to Jason in Plano. Hello, Jason.
Hi. I was calling in. I just wanted to make a quick comment. As far as the death penalty goes, in addition to the justice and everything that people look for in it, it also has the flip side that it protect society. I mean, you have some of these violent people that who on occasion do get released, and then they'll turn around and they'll do another violent crime. How do you go to their parents and say, your daughter's been killed horribly by this person who has a horrible history of violent crimes? So I understand that it's not a perfect solution, but until we come up with a better solution, it has a very beneficent purpose of protecting everybody in society.
Thanks for your call.
Jason, I've worked with this for over 20 years now. We'd like to think that the reason we have to kill some people who are very violent is it's going to protect society. I just came from Denver, Colorado, who's working to repeal the death penalty because of the millions of dollars that's put into it to get one person who did a very violent crime, and the victims' families of unsolved homicides are asking that instead of having the death penalty, the money be put into solving the unsolved homicides. We have a track record now of 30 years. The states that do practice the death penalty the most roughly have a greater homicide rate than states that don't. And all states now really do have an alternative of life without parole, that a person is going to be kept in prison the rest of their life and society can be protected. And once you get into this, realize all the mistakes that are made, 131 people around the country have been wrongly convicted, and we have an alternative. We have it waiting for us tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And if you look at the trends that are happening here in Texas, more and more jurors are choosing that as the alternative, and it's harder now, actually, for people to give the death penalty when they know they can protect society with life without parole sentences.
For so many people, though, Sister, and I know you understand this, thinking moral people in many cases just see sympathy for the victims and compassion for the offenders as always mutually exclusive. What is it that you're able to, what is it about you that allows you to practice both at the same time?
Well, I mean, that's really what it means to be human. See, I get exposed to both. For many people on the death penalty, you hear the stories, or you might know someone who has had a loved one murdered. Very few people, especially if we have any modicum of success in society, knows anybody that has a son on death row. It's all poor people. So our exposure to people and their pain is usually kind of one-sided. And the way often the politics runs, because the death penalty is a huge, has a huge percent of political symbolism in it. Here's how we're really going to be tough. And if you're not for the death penalty, if you're not for the ultimate punishment, then you're soft on crime. And the whole nation right now is beginning to look at the death penalty in a different way, and we have a diminishment more and more and more of death penalties. And since Texas now has life without parole, it's happening there too. What does compassion mean? It means you just feel the suffering on both sides. What do victims' families really need? They need people accompanying them. They need help. They need support. They need to tell their story and fall apart and come back together again. They need to be connected in community. They don't need to be left alone. My big shock when I went to murder victim support meetings was how many people leave victims' families alone because the pain's too great, and they say, I don't want to say the wrong thing. Both really need support and help and accompaniment from the community. Mm-hmm. And then when any government, when any society says that we can take on ourselves to decide that there are certain ones among us not fit to live, and we can set up a legal procedures or a way to determine who those people are, we already are in trouble as a society. Mm-hmm. It's a very arbitrary and capricious thing how victims, certain victims' cases, are decided that we will pursue the death penalty, and others, they don't.
This has been such a great discussion, but I don't want to let you both leave without wishing you a happy birthday, Sister. You turned 70 this week?
70. I'm trying to comprehend that. I am trying to comprehend that. So we had crawfish, ball crawfish, and beer, and a great celebration. And some people from around the Chicago Tribune put that in the paper. And under birthdays and stuff. I hardly know what this means.
I'm sitting here looking at you thinking, 70?
Well, you know, nudge, we got no worries. Get involved with the death penalty and victims' families. It'll keep you young.
Yeah.
We should look so good at 70,
right? Seriously.
No, really.
Yeah.
No. Well, look, I tell you, I'm very, very – what came inside my soul the other morning when I woke up was, it's like this little voice said, I have allowed you to live longer already than most people in the world. I'm reading about Flannery O'Connor, you know, who was a Southern writer. She died at 39. Mm-hmm. And people in the world, the average lifespan, like, why am I being permitted to live so long? And I want to give my life as a gift in any way I can. I want to live to the full. And I tell you, when you do get it, like the experience of the opera is going to bring people into all the deep stuff, life, death, compassion, vengeance, love, hate, and where are we in our lives? It puts us up against our own lives and just saying, you know, I want to live. I really want to live.
Mm.
Well, it's been a pleasure and a privilege to have both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
It's been great to be with you, Chris.
Yeah.
I want to thank all of you as well who have called throughout this hour to support KERA. Our telephone number is 1-800-456-5372. You can also go to kera.org online. If you recognize the ways in which public radio is entirely different from any other kind of broadcast radio in North Texas, then we ask you to also recognize the difference in the way that we're supported. We don't have commercials to keep us going, and we like that because it gives us the freedom to take on a lot of topics that advertisers might not want to mess with. We appreciate your willingness as an audience to come to those topics, and we ask that you support us at 1-800-456-5372. You can also go to kera.org online. It's quick and simple and makes a tremendous difference in our ability to serve you every day of the year. Jeff Whittington is back with us now. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And I want to remind everybody, and Tyler especially, who listened to KERA on 100.1 FM, that Blake Bailey, one of our terrific members from Tyler, has offered a $1,000 challenge to those of you who listen in Tyler to match your contribution dollar for dollar up to $1,000. And this started at 10 a.m. this morning and goes until we've reached the $1,000 raised from Tyler listeners. Blake Bailey did this challenge last year as well, and we met it thanks to the generosity of those of you in Tyler. So we'd love to repeat that success. We'd love to hear from you in Tyler. We'd love to hear from you everywhere, but especially because of Blake Bailey's generosity. Please call us at 800-456-5372. Please go online to kera.org and make your contribution now.
I want to thank folks like Paula Luna in Arlington, Brittany Connor in Richardson, Janelle Ellis in Dallas, Jake Kluge in Rockwall, and all of you who are picking up the phone right now or logging onto your computers right now and making those contributions. The process takes just a couple of minutes. You can decide for yourself. Look, maybe you're at a place in your life where you can make a $1,500 contribution, become a friend of the station. Maybe you're ready to be a day sponsor at $365. Maybe you want to do a basic membership and just do a few dollars a month. That's entirely up to you. We just ask that you call 1-800-456-5372. This is your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas-Fort Worth, Denton, K261 CW 100.1 in Tyler, K202 88.3 in Wichita Falls, and K257 EV 99.3 in Sherman.
It is your public radio station, no matter where you listen. It's KERA. You get the same stuff everybody else gets in the North Texas area. And a lot of you really like this stuff. We really shouldn't even have to tell you, like, what shows there are or why you listen. I mean, you know why you listen. You're even listening during the membership campaign. You know what you get when you tune to KERA. You know what you can expect from day to day. And as I said before, you may not always agree with everything on the station, but you know what? That's what it's all about. It's about a diversity of opinions. It's about a place where everybody can gather and share in the differences and uniqueness that makes us all who we are. And your participation in this show, the fact that you listen to the show, to the Think program, the fact that you download the podcast, if that is something you appreciate, that it's available, you use it, please support the station at 800-456-5372. Please go online to kera.org. And when you're getting ready to download maybe yesterday's podcast or maybe this one later today, support the station as well.
Yeah, look, we know that it's really easy to listen to these membership campaigns and think that we're talking to someone else other than you, to assume that somebody else will step up and make the contributions necessary. But why would you do that? If you are someone who listens and who believes in the values of public radio, take your experience that much further and become a supporting member of the station and see how that enhances the way you feel about the station and about your participation in something that we would argue you know is important in your community and probably talk about with your friends and other people on a regular basis. You know the value of public radio. Please also recognize the cost of public radio by making a contribution. 1-800-456-5372 is the number. You can also do this online at kera.org.
We've heard from Melinda Coker in Tyler. Hello,
all
Melinda.
Right, Tyler.
Thank you. And Celia Pachak, or is it Pichak? I hope I got it right one of those times. And Tyler, we've heard from four of you in Tyler so far. You know what? That's great. And we want to thank Blake Bailey again, a current KERA member who has offered a $1,000 challenge to residents of Tyler who listen to the station on 100.1 on the dial. It's a dollar-for-dollar match for everybody who contributes from Tyler up to $1,000. So please call 800-456-5372 or pledge online right now.
This is your station. Whether you listen to it live on the air or in the podcast, we need and value your support. The number to call is 1-800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org. Thank you very much.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.